I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS On Air's Washington Weekly Podcast. Each week, we do like to touch base with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy to discuss the latest on developments within the Beltway and beyond. Today, we will touch on Saudi Arabia, fiscal 2020, tax cuts 2.0, and more. And joining me for the podcast, as always, glad to welcome back from the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy in Washington, D.C., Shane Lieberman. So, Shane, good morning. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us again this week.
Always good to be with you on a Friday morning.
So, Shane, we've discussed on UBS On Air this week a lot about Saudi Arabia, and developments are occurring each day. It's a very fluid situation, has wide-ranging implications. It's received a lot of headline attention. Can you bring us up to speed as far as where we currently stand with this story, and maybe some thoughts around potential next steps with respect to U.S. involvement?
Yeah, so President Trump has called on Treasury Secretary Mnuchin to pursue even further sanctions against Iran. These economic sanctions will be the kind of first wave and biggest step by the U.S. at this point. Secretary of State Pompeo has traveled to Saudi Arabia to show Iran that the U.S. is with Saudi Arabia. There has been some tough language from Secretary Pompeo, although he offered no real specifics of action by the U.S. But he's now working on building up coalition to support Iran. Support Saudi Arabia against Iran. Iran has had their own tough talk as well. Their foreign minister has said that further actions by the U.S. or others would be a precursor to all-out war. And Iran is actually not taking responsibility for this attack. They're blaming the Houthis in Yemen, who are backed by Iran anyways. But the evidence does not show at this time that it was the Houthis. The 18 drones and 7 cruise missiles came from the north, and they have a limited range of about 435 miles, according to weapons experts. So that really is outside of Yemen's range and points to Iran. I think we are now at a point where heat will start to be ratcheted up in the international community, and that's what President Trump is looking for. He doesn't want to go it alone approach. He does have that little bit of non-interventionist streak in him, but when he's pushed to act as this is, he is being forced to pursue sanctions, and the next steps are a little bit of not show your hand at this point. But I think it's safe to say that the coalition will be very important to any effort here against Iran.
Yeah, and I know next week here in New York we have the UN General Assembly, happens on an annual basis, so you wonder what kinds of conversations will be had between U.S. and foreign officials, perhaps trying to develop a coalition here. But I'm sure that Iran will be a hot point of contention, so we'll have to see what next week brings with respect to developments around Iran. Something that has not received much attention, the fact that fiscal 2020 begins in less than 2 weeks, and a funding bill, as far as I know, has yet to be signed into law. These things tend to happen last minute. Shane, from your vantage point, what are the prospects for avoiding a government shutdown comes October 1st?
Yeah, I think right now the prospects are good to avoiding government shutdown on October 1st. This week, the House passed what's known as a continuing resolution, and that would fund the government until November 21st. This passed with a wide bipartisan majority. I think it was 301 to 123 no votes. So there were over 70 Republicans that joined the Democrats to supporting this. A continuing resolution essentially just funds at current level government spending. So there isn't anything to try and upset the apple cart here, we'll say. And this bipartisan vote is positive for numerous points. One, obviously, because it passed the House. But two, it takes some pressure off the Senate. If it was a party line vote, then Republicans who control the Senate would feel the pressure not to support it. This gives them a little bit more breathing room. The Senate is currently scheduled to take this up next week. So hopefully there'll be a resolution next week, and we'll be assured that government is funded through November 21st, which would give some breathing room to negotiate a final deal. There are hot button issues like guns, immigration, border wall funding that may complicate the issue at the end of the day. But I think as of today, it's heading in a positive direction, and we hopefully will avoid another government shutdown.
Okay, that's refreshing to hear. It sounds like it's moving in a positive direction, and hopefully next week it will yield a good result. So we'll have to see what happens. Sticking with Capitol Hill for a moment, I know headlines surrounding tax cuts 2.0 have been recently popping up. What do we know about this, Shane? And given the fiscal deficit that we're facing, what is the likelihood of something like this gaining traction?
Yeah, right. We do not believe this will happen this year or next year. You're seeing the Trump administration talk about releasing their plan next year, 2020, which signals that it's kind of an election year political document that would talk about what they would like to pass in 2021 more realistically than 2020. Dems, especially the presidential candidates, have been releasing their own plans. A lot of them are targeting what they would term as the rich or Wall Street, and would impact investors. So there's a lot of political rhetoric around taxes right now. And so we kind of put it in that classification of rhetoric and noise, and not too much to be concerned about in the near term. We believe it's important to follow all these things, because some of them may be in the long-term offering, and we need to all be aware of that. But in the near term, you know, there may be some tax extenders later this year, which are just smaller expired tax provisions that are very usually narrowly focused, you know, like some are on renewable energies that would help the renewable energy industry. So those are really targeted. I think that's the most likely of anything that will pass later this year on the tax front. So tax cuts 2.0 is very interesting to follow, but I don't think we need to be concerned about it as if it were going to happen in the near term.
Okay, appreciate the insights into that, Shane. Just a quick sidebar, you did mention proposed plans from Democratic candidates. I noticed this morning that New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, it sounds like he's dropped out, right?
That is correct. So another one drops out, and the Democratic field is narrowing. You know, I think the debates, him not being included in the latest debate and not getting really any polling traction or traction in the early states of, you know, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, really, you know, closed the door for Mayor de Blasio. And you're seeing a lot of candidates positioning to try and make their last real effort to actually build their name ID and get some momentum, or else they too will be dropping out soon. You also see credible candidates like Bernie Sanders retooling his campaign because, you know, it's been a little stagnant, and he has not grown, you know, his grassroots support. So he himself is one of the top three candidates, is trying to reignite the energy for his candidacy.
Yeah, to your point, I read as well that Kamala Harris, it sounds like she's putting all of her chips in Iowa. So I'm sure the field will thin out over the next few weeks or so, but it's getting thinner, it seems, by the week. I do want to follow up from our conversation last week. So a successor to former NSA National Security Advisor John Bolton was named. The successor, not really a household name, so to speak. What can you share with us about his profile?
Yeah, his name is Robert O'Brien. He's a lawyer by background, but he's served in foreign policy roles before. He served in the State Department for under George W. Bush. He's more recently, during the Trump administration, been a hostage negotiator. His most recent success there is he was the negotiator to get to free rapper ASAP Rocky. I think it's apt that you note that he's not a household name. And I think that may make him successful in this role. And when I say successful, I mean not that he's going to do a good job, but he will be successful in being better fit to work with President Trump than his predecessor, John Bolton. Without being a household name and being that pedigree of a staffer, he may be more able to navigate President Trump and work with him and understand that he is not the face of these issues President Trump is. Sometimes when you get someone in those roles who gets a little bit big for their britches and starts thinking it's about them, not the president, they run afoul. And I think we saw that with John Bolton, where he and the president had differing views, and John Bolton expressed those views. A staffer would always take, the principal's view, even if they disagree. So I think that may lead to Robert O'Brien to have a more successful career within this role with President Trump. But regardless, I think it's also important to know that he wrote a book, and that book was entitled While America Slept. And that gives you kind of an idea of that he continues the vision of John Bolton, of a strong foreign policy, strong U.S. national defense. And that's important as he faces a lot of challenges like Iran, North Korea, Russia, and many others.
Yeah, John Bolton, obviously a very spirited personality when it comes to promoting his policy views, and it sounds like O'Brien's more of a mediator, so we'll have to see how this dynamic plays out over the course of time. One final point I'd like to hit on with you, Shane, before we wrap up our conversation for this week, of course, on the trade front. Anything new as it pertains to China and the U.S. and even the USMCA?
Yeah, the USMCA, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, is moving along. Sometimes it feels like it's moving at a glacial pace, but they're still working towards a October-November vote. You're seeing some frustration among many Democrats because they're not being courted as much as, some of the centrist Democrats, because that's who President Trump and the Democratic leadership really needs to get on board to move this ahead. So, but they're making progress, still not there yet. I think right now we still view an October-November vote likely, and we think it'll be passed, but very narrowly. But this is very fluid. On China, it's starting to get interesting. You're seeing a lot of leaks out of the White House about the White House contemplating an interim deal. This, to me, seems to be really the White House staff contemplating it, and President Trump is not on board yet with this plan. I think the staff is interested in pursuing this because it would likely boost markets, as there would be some tariff relief along with this interim deal. So this would be a short-term win with that could have more turbulence ahead as they still pursue the larger deal and the more meaty issues that are tougher to negotiate. I think this is something that will develop in the next few weeks as President Trump really weighs in if he wants to pursue this option. And finally, I think we need to still keep our eyes on Hong Kong. This is a real powder keg for China, and the U.S. has been quiet on the subject. But if it goes wrong and China really puts their thumb on Hong Kong and Hong Kong citizens, the U.S. may feel the need to be vocal about this issue, which would really fray U.S.-China trade negotiations. So Hong Kong is a powder keg issue that we still need to think of that could complicate U.S.-China trade negotiations.
Okay, well, Shane, we covered a lot of ground, as always. Really appreciate your insights. I'm sure next week we'll touch on the U.N. General Assembly. I'm already planning my alternative route to work, being here in Midtown. It's always interesting. I think it's the biggest concentration of black Chevy Suburbans for a week. So that's a
good luck with that.
Yeah, absolutely. But Shane, we'll catch up next week. I hope you enjoy your weekend, and thank you very much for lending a few moments today.
Thank you, Dan. You have a great weekend as well.
Thank you, Shane. And again, we have been joined by Shane Lieberman from the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy in Washington, D.C. For our listeners, be sure to reference the most recent edition of the Washington Weekly publication that can now be located up on UBS Online Services. But of course, if you are a client of UBS, just reach out to your financial advisor. They can provide you with a copy of the most recent Washington Weekly publication directly to you. From the UBS On Air studio in New York City, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers both investment advisory services and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and governed by different laws and separate contracts. For more information, visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. All rights reserved. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA SIPC.